For almost 3 weeks now, Africa's third largest country has been falling apart. A violent row between two military forces who can't agree on how Sudan is run has killed hundreds of people, injured thousands more, and sent most of the population into hiding or out of their homes. The United Nations has warned that Sudan is reaching a humanitarian breaking point. Foreign countries have been evacuating their nationals amid the chaos, many across the Red Sea from Port Sudan to Saudi Arabia. The BBC's chief international correspondent, Elise Doucette, is there. We talked with her earlier.
How heartbreaking to travel across the Red Sea in a Saudi warship for 10 hours to approach the coastline of Port Sudan on the eastern coast of Sudan, its biggest port. It used to be a busy trading hub, and now it is rapidly turning into a hub for evacuation and humanitarian effort. And from the boat, we could see the tented villages taking shape all along the quayside. Tens of thousands of Sudanese, of foreign nationals, have fled to this corner of Sudan, which is relatively peaceful compared to the many cities, including the capital Khartoum, which have descended into an orgy of bloody violence and wanton looting. So many are heading to Port Sudan, where we made a visit this weekend, hoping against hope that they can get out. They are getting out. The warships, the frigates, the tugboats were lined up in the harbor, even at 2 a.m. in the morning. And we met many people queuing at the quayside, including those who returned with us to the Saudi port city of Jeddah, from where I'm speaking to you today, to make that Red Sea crossing. Their trauma, their fear was written all over their face. There was one young man from Pakistan. When I said, you know, how was your journey here to the coast of Sudan? He said, I have seen too much, too many bombs dropping, too many guns firing. And then he just seized up. He couldn't say anymore. He was lost for words.
I heard you speaking on the BBC this morning to an 8-year-old child describing her escape.
It's astonishing, isn't it? And in war after war, and there are too many wars of our time, the most innocent are forced to survive, to live through what even adults find difficult. And we came across this Sudanese American family in the port city of Jeddah here in Saudi Arabia. They, in a way, we're the lucky ones. They have a second passport, and that is gold dust in this crisis, because millions of Sudanese have no way out. But this family, including 8-year-old Lean, they had just disembarked. Their crossing was some 18 hours. And an 8-year-old, you can imagine the excitement, but also the overwhelming emotions, babbling on about how they were in their house and these bad men broke down the windows, broke down the doors. They had to hide for days in the back room. And of course, as a child, she would have been told constantly by her mother, Rasha, don't cry, don't make any noise. The bad men are going to find us. And when I said, oh, Lean, how are you? Were you brave? And she just says so resolutely, I was calm. But inside that youthful bravado, of course, there is the trauma that will live with those children for the rest of their lives. And we saw one young girl who escaped. There are many girls and boys like Lean who are still trapped in this deepening crisis across Sudan.
Tell us more about what they've left behind.
They've left everything behind. With the looting, they've lost their homes. With the economic collapse and the breakdown of public services, they're losing their livelihoods, the life that they lived. And now, despite a very imperfect, very partial ceasefire, they fear that they're going to lose their country. So many, for example, of the foreigners who I met as they left Port Sudan, as the tugboat pulled away that we were on from the Sudan coast, all of the passengers turned around and they waved goodbye as if they were waving to a dear friend. And so many looked at me and said, we will never see our Sudanese friends again. And one man said, who was going to be going back to Nepal, where he was born, I said, you think he'll come back to Sudan? And he just shook his head and he said, Sudan is finished. It's heartbreaking. These are human stories. This is a political story of deep, deeply entrenched rivalries between the two most powerful men and their forces in Sudan. But it is also a personal tragedy. Everyone you meet, everyone has a story. And it's a sad, sad story.
You're meeting the people who are leaving, many of them who come from other countries originally, but there are millions left behind, millions of Sudanese left behind. I heard David Miliband speaking last week about how it's stuck in his gullet, the international focus on trying to evacuate foreigners, while millions of Sudanese will be left behind.
Millions of Sudanese, millions, well, large numbers of people who were unlucky in the passport lottery. Thousands of Yemenis, for example, 3,000 Yemeni students have been stuck in Port Sudan for weeks. There's no one willing to put them on a ship. Saudi Arabia does not want Yemenis or Syrians or Sudanese to arrive at their shore and to set up in some kind of camp that will go, as we've seen from camps in other parts of this region, the camps turn into town and they go on for generations to come. And it's very, very, very unfair. We could see it in action when we stood on this side of at the main naval base in, here in the port city of Jeddah. The diplomats who were standing quayside waving their flags, we could see the British flags, the Norwegian, the Swedish, the Thai, the Pakistani. So yes, it is deeply, deeply unfair and deeply jarring when you see it's the luckiest and the wealthiest who get out. There are, I know, others. I spoke to someone who's hoping to try to get some of these Yemeni students out. And of course, they will return to a country which is poor and not quite as war-torn, but has been war-torn for years, just like Sudan.
That's the BBC's Lise Doucette speaking to us from Saudi Arabia earlier today.